Hello, everyone, and welcome to your meditation and mindfulness project, how to use the wisdom of simple meditation, mindfulness, and yoga techniques to live your life of calm, peace, and happiness, no matter how busy your life is. This is Anna De La Rosa, your host, and I have Tiffany here today with us from Yoga Medicine, and I'm so excited to have her because she has so much wealth of information and knowledge on the subject that we're going to be going over today, and I can't wait for her to talk to everybody. How are you, Tiffany?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Anna.
Oh, it's a pleasure and honor to have you, girlfriend. What is your main topic as far as yoga medicine? What does that mean in your world?
Yeah, yoga medicine, as a healthcare provider myself, I saw not only the yoga side of it, of how much yoga was really helping my students, but also the healthcare side of it, of really seeing this need for mindfulness and yoga in a more preventative and wellness setting within the medical world. And so yoga medicine is what I created to help kind of bridge the gap between yoga and the medical world. One of the biggest gaps that I saw was that there were doctors who really wanted to use yoga, but the beauty of yoga is that there's so much diversity and variety, which is, I think, a wonderful thing. But as a healthcare provider, it can be really overwhelming and intimidating. So we provide a community of teachers who have been trained more in both the Eastern tradition of yoga as well as the Western side of anatomy and physiology in a deeper level so that they can connect and support the medical world and be able to apply it more to the individual so that they can work with different injuries or illnesses in a more therapeutic context?
You know, that's really interesting because, you know, before I started my whole business, I was in the medical field. And, you know, when you did not years ago have that as an option, and now it's getting more and more common. And a lot of people are doing studies on it. And when they've used yoga medicine and that as far as, you know, psychological and depression and anxiety, do you find that it sticks more with that patient than it would someone that doesn't do it?
Yeah, I mean, I found right away when I started seeing patients that because I was seeing a population of yoga students as well, that the people who were doing yoga responded a lot quicker, whether that was mental health or injuries. I do a lot of orthopedics, so physical injuries as well, that they were responding better. So I quickly started adding in what I called yoga prescriptions, which was just usually a pose or two, oftentimes simple things like breathing exercises or meditation that they could do on their own really easily. And I found that, you know, their response to my treatments was a lot faster. It was just increasing their capacity to be resilient and kind of bounce back from injuries, whether that was mental or physical. And so I've used it with my patients over the last 13 years as a really big part of my practice. And, you know, also training teachers over the past 10 to 15 years, started out of my house, but using it with them and training them to be able to increase the effectiveness of their treatments with students as well.
That is so exciting. I love that.
Yeah, and like you said, there's so much popping up now. I mean, there's a lot of hospitals that are using it sometimes for their doctors, which we forget about is almost as important or more important as the people providing the care. There's actually
That's
a lot
amazing.
Of that going on in the wellness programs for the healthcare providers and the hospitals and insurance companies kind of starting to cover it, definitely in private plans. And
yes,
it's more than I ever thought.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. It's come a long way. I remember back in the day when they never would cover even chiropractic care, and they're just now, you know, they've started doing that more and more. But I know that a lot of my companies that I represent, as far as the carriers are concerned, you know, they cover it, but, you know, the doctors still have to fight for their money.
Yeah.
Have you had any myths about meditation that you've come across that people are skeptical or you've heard that really aren't true?
Oh, my gosh, there's a ton. I'd say the biggest ones that I would see, especially hindrances to people starting meditation, are, you know, one is that you have to meditate for a certain amount of time, whether that's 20 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour. I remember when I started, the lineage that I studied with, you know, very strongly opinionated about needing to meditate for at least an hour a day. And I was 16 at the time, so that was pretty intimidating for me. And what we see now in a lot of the research is that people are actually getting changes in their brain that we can actually see on scans in just 10 minutes of meditating. And clearly we've seen that that does build up over time, so that people who are long-term meditators, we can see much greater changes in the effects of the meditation practice. But we see that with short periods of time. So I think one of the big myths that we see is that you've got to sit for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. Mm-hmm. I always try and get people just to start with 5 minutes.
Yes.
And what is important is that there is a frequency to it. We know that with neuroplasticity of the brain, our ability to really change how our brain thinks and functions and our body as well, is that we have to do something regularly. So 5 minutes a day, I think, is much better than an hour once a week.
Yeah.
The other big one I see is that meditation is about stilling your mind. And for me, meditation is not about making the mind still, but about watching the mind. And a lot of times that does mean that the mind slows down, but it's not so much about trying to stop thinking as much as just be aware.
Yeah. And, you know, when I first started out a couple of years ago, I did the guided meditation. So I would always be asleep, or I would always be, you know, in the home. But now over time and the research and what I've come about, you know, there's walking meditations, there's breathing meditation, mantras. There's so many different types that we can do. And it's really, really opened my eyes personally that I don't have to be at home going to sleep or in a bed setting like back in the day.
Yeah. I think that brings up another good myth, is that, you know, yoga, that meditation has to be done a certain way. There's so many different styles. One thing, you know, I have a few that I like that are simple that I use with my patients, but I really always encourage people just to find a technique that works for them, that there is a place for every style of meditation that can be helpful in different ways. And I think, you know, you just have to find something you can stick with, which is really important.
What style do you like to do that's helpful?
I do really simple mindfulness practices. I think one of my go-to for myself as well as my patients is what I call a 10-count meditation, which is a common one used in a lot of different meditation practices, where you count the breath. So it's, you count the exhale is one, the next one is 2, 3 to 10. And, you know, the idea is that it's meant to be a tool to help, you know, focus the mind, so that there is, you know, clearly going to be a point where your mind wanders off. Maybe you might get to 2 or 3, or maybe you get to 25, and you just keep bringing yourself back. And it's about kind of being able to, you know, laugh at the nature of our mind of running around and not having to make it perfect. But there's a non-judgmental attitude, I think, that's really important in meditation, is that there's two main concepts that you see over and over. One is being non-judgmental. So it's being able to watch the breath without having to judge it or, you know, make it different than it is. And two is being able to just be an observer. So being able to watch the breath without having to change it. It's, you know, our human tendency to want to, as we watch something, get involved in it. This is, you know, the typical image of a parent who watches their child and things that they've struggled with previously and wanting to help out. But, you know, the meditation practice is about really being able to truly being an observer without having to change the breath or the sensations, and trying not to judge or color those interpretations as good or bad or right or wrong.
Oh, I love that, Tiffany, because basically the older generation thinks that it has to be a certain time frame or it's harder or they can't incorporate it in, but you just make it so simple, and you can just start even driving in the car, or, you know, even sitting with your child if you have a child, or, you know, it can be not as hard as we want to make it in our mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think just with those few principles, I think you can apply it to many different things. And there's a lot of practices around simple things like being aware while you wash the dishes, you know, things that are really monotonous, that we could kind of be thinking about our to-do list and maybe even getting stressed out about the next day. And instead, you know, it's hard to actually get something done when you're doing the dishes and planning things out in your head. There's that moment of going, okay, well, that will come tomorrow. And for now, I'm just going to, you know, notice my breath and notice the sensations and notice my tendency to get stressed out and notice my tendency of the mind to wander around. And it's not a bad thing or a wrong thing. It's just a human thing.
Right, right. Well, you know, as a entrepreneur yourself, you get so busy, and I know I get busy as well. And, you know, what would be the number one advice as far as yoga, meditation, or mindfulness? What could we tell our audience today, you know, where to start if they've never done?
I would say the biggest thing is to find a time in your day you can commit to. For me, the first thing in the morning is the easiest, because once you start getting on the emails and you start working, and, you know, there's always something more important that you need to get done. There's always one more thing that you need to get done, and the day gets away from you. I also find it just starts the day well. So if you can commit to just 5 minutes, and I really recommend that people just start with just that 5 minutes and not increase it until you feel like you really, really want to do more. There's not necessarily more of a benefit by doing more, but just to make it a consistent practice that you can commit to. So 5 minutes a day, just doing something simple like counting the breath, again, with those points of, you know, just being an observer and trying not to judge it as good or bad. And notice, I mean, we see a lot of the effects on cognitive function. You know, one of the beauties, I think, of it is that, you know, one of the big things is this idea of presence. I hate catchwords, but presence is such a great word. And I think we get catchwords because they seem to encapsulate many concepts into one idea. And this idea of being present or presence that has become kind of a big catchphrase in the yoga world, I think is one of those because it encapsulates the beauty of meditation, which is twofold. One is the awareness that it creates, this awareness in our bodies, of our breath, of what's going on around us. But then that also implies a level of kind of staying power, of steadiness, and that presence can, you know, can apply to your work, being more efficient in that presence in the work that you're doing. It can apply to athletic endeavors, your ability to be in the zone, or it can apply to your interactions with loved ones and your ability to really have really deep, rich, meaningful connections with the people around you. And, you know, whoever you are, I think you can benefit from some of that presence in your life.
Yeah, I like that. And it just so happened that I finished reading a book called Presence by Amy Cuddy, and I literally learned so much about that with, you know, like just these little things that we don't realize, but it was a great book, and she called it Presence. And it was exactly what you were saying. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think we forget about the simple things. And
that's it.
As a healthcare provider as well, it's one of the reasons I think meditation and yoga is such a huge part of our medical system is that as a patient and as a healthcare provider, having this awareness of what's going on in your body on a moment basis is really critical and crucial to being able to not only understand how your body responds to different things, but also make changes and choices that really help kind of advocate for our health and wellness. And it really is, for me, the foundation of everything, whether that's health or efficiency or cognitive function or interpersonal relations.
Right. Well, you know, there's so much on the internet today about it. Do you have something that we could narrow down for our audience today? I know they can go to your website, yogamedicine.com, but is there a place on your website, or do you have something that you could give them if they wanted to research themselves as far as in a website that you would recommend?
Do you mean for meditation?
Yeah, or any type of mindfulness or, you know, yoga techniques or even, you know, the present, you know, just learning about it if someone wanted to go online and look.
Yeah, there's the mindfulness-based stress reduction is a really great resource for people looking for either information on mindfulness or meditation. They also have some good research, trying to pull it up really quickly, but some good research, I think, on that website. If you look up mindfulness-based stress reduction, I think you'll find all sorts of different tools. Jon Kabat-Zinn was one of just a legend in mindfulness and meditation, and they do a lot of really great research and work in hospitals. And I know my book, Meditate Your Weight, is a good resource for people wanting more information on how meditation affects our metabolism, and not just our metabolism, but our food choices and our healthy kind of habits. And then there's tons. There's so much. I would have never guessed that meditation would be such a huge movement if you'd told me that 20 years ago. I wouldn't have believed you. But I think it's so incredible to see it becoming such a big thing now that people are utilizing, from executives to athletes to householders to anyone interested in so many of the things that we've talked about today.
And it's like a one-stop shop, and it really is amazing. It's not the monk that's been sitting on the side of the mountain forever. It's more of the daily, everyday person that you can incorporate it anywhere. And that's why I'm so excited to have you a part of the journey with me, as well as the audience. Tiffany, I just wanted to thank you for joining your Meditation and Mindfulness Project today and coming aboard with me to help spread the word about meditation, yoga, and mindfulness practices and get in some depth about the health benefits and the medical side, because sometimes we don't get the medical side of things. We might just hear bits and pieces, and then, you know, we don't really know the whole true benefit of the practices of meditation, mindfulness, and yoga. So thank you so much for that. And coming out and getting with us when it's, you know, the holiday season and busy, busy, busy times. So thank you, Tiffany, for coming aboard. Everyone, I want to let you know that we will have all of Tiffany's information on the webpage as far as her website and her book and all of her details, and then also in the email details that I send to you guys. So thank y'all so much for participating as well and joining the journey with us.